Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. Today we're going to have Michael Kwan discussing his memoirs, I Played the White Guy on Montclair. Things in this world I hate to miss. One's a Lakers game and the other's Rich Rossi Live. You gotta be cuckoo to miss this show, you know what I mean, pal? And wait till you get a load of what Rich is gonna talk about today. Today we're gonna talk about Michael Cole's journey as an actor, star of the Mod Squad, and his spiritual journey in his new book, I Played the White Guy. And we'll be back momentarily. They're letting me know Michael has called in on line one, and let me refresh your memory with that powerful theme song from Tuesday Nights, The Mod Squad. And you saw Michael Cole, Clarence Williams, Peggy Lipton running down the alley to that song. Well, I'd like to welcome live on the air actor Michael Cole, who played Pete, who became the heartthrob on the show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. It's nice to talk to you, Rich.
Well, I loved your book. I almost
started running when I heard that music.
Well, I read in your book that you kind of just grabbed that in an alley at the studio, kind of on the fly to create the beginning, but it's such a great beginning.
Isn't that something? Earl Hagen pulled that out of nowhere. It was the first, we had one day before we were going on the air, and Aaron was sweating. You could see, he was all over the place. What are we going about? He jumped in his golf cart, and went all over Paramount Studios. And finally he saw this one place where they used to store old flats, they weren't using anymore for different episodes, et cetera, et cetera. And in his mind, his great producer mind, he said, that's it. Water this thing down, we'll shoot it at night, and light it for night. And that was it.
Using what was right there.
It was right there. And you said, water it down, because if you noticed, we were running and hitting the puddles, which gave a little edge of drama to it. So Aaron knew what he was doing. But that's
Well, reading
that
your book, Michael, I tell you, my wife and I, reading the book, we were talking about this, how your life in this book, probably more than 99% of the people walking this planet, had very extreme highs and lows before getting this job. You were, sleeping in the car and homeless, and then you become a breakout star.
Under the freeways.
Yeah. Was it scary or nerve-wracking to go from, leaving your hometown of Wisconsin, all of a sudden you're acting with Oscar-winning actors on the Mod Squad?
It really wasn't scary. It was sad for me because I was married very young, and we had two children, and I still got along with my ex-wife, but I had started drinking by then,
mm-hmm.
and that was no good. And I was starting to get into a little trouble, or a lot of trouble. Anyway, when I left, I first went to San Francisco, and it truly was a flower in your hair, like a great song if you're going to San Francisco. And eventually, things started working out, Richard, that I knew I was involved in the arts, in the creative community, and Am I going along and answering your question?
Oh, no, no, that's you sure are, and that guidance. I feel that you have such a spiritual story, too, of feeling your buddy Christ's presence, as you call it, and you kind of knew intuitively that you were an artist, you were a creative person, even though your life experience didn't give you a lot of that growing up, maybe, perhaps, until you got out here and you were working across from the theater I read on, it's now the Ricardo Montalban Theater, I think.
Right. It happens. I don't know. We were born and raised Irish Catholic.
Yeah,
me too. Oh, really? Okay. And don't you love this Pope?
Oh, I love Pope Francis. Yeah, I think
he's
really
special guy,
being more like Jesus to reach out to the outcasts and the
absolutely,
you know.
Man. But. Now, where were we? Sorry.
We were talking about your creative journey and how you you were a dad at an early age, and that, you know, you loved that woman, but it you know, things didn't work out, and you were find yourself in Hollywood trying to survive whatever job you could get. You get a job as a bartender, and now all of a sudden there's a theater across the street.
Yeah, it was big, beautiful. The Huntington Hartford, it was called. And I'd first, before I came to L.A., was a bartender in Vegas. And so I was pretty handy behind the bar. But anyway, right across the street from this incredible theater was a bar that I got a job in. And and the people, the cast, would come over afterward. And they would sit around and talk about how the play went. And next time I want to do this or I feel this, I said, you know, this is really making sense to me. I understand what the hell they're talking about. And one night, a producer came in and said, I understand you want to be an actor. And he helped me very much. He said, the first thing you have to do, I could give you a spear. You know what I mean? And have you standing in the background. And it wouldn't mean a thing. But after talking to you for a little while, you should go to school. Some actor's workshop. And he mentioned a magic name for me, Estelle Harmon.
And oh, she was a wonderful teacher out here.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, you knew of Estelle.
Yeah, I have some friends that studied with her back in the day, and she was, I think, the official teacher at one of the studios, right?
She handled the talent at Universal. She was also the head of the drama department at UCLA.
Mm.
But anyway, I walk in and off the streets, and I've been living in the streets all most of my life. I had no idea what the hell I was doing. But I found Estelle to be a beautiful, soft-spoken, very wise lady and very pretty. And so I walked in, and she says, hi, Michael. I understand you're interested in acting, something like that. And she said, let's read a scene together, right off the sidewalk into the scene. And I was starting to shake a little bit, but she said, you know, don't be nervous. You go over this, take it out to the back to the stage. Her stage was in back of her office, like this beautiful little place. And anyway, I started to go over. It was from All My Sons, the thing with Edward G. Robinson, where he was making airplanes that were deficient, trying to make some more money during the war, and planes were crashing. And it was an argumentative scene between his son and Mr. Robertson. And we got in a big argument. And I think Richard, really, I just carried myself into that scene, because I would get angry at the drop of a hat at many things, as you probably know from reading. And anyway, Estelle just, first time ever, I was really surprised. She just looked at me, soft brown eyes. And all of a sudden, they started to zero in on what's inside me. They could feel it. And she said, I want you to come back. And that was that. I went back there. And she said, you still don't have a place to live, do you? No, I was living under the Sunset Boulevard freeway.
Wow.
Yeah, true story, in my bathroom on the corner. I'm not trying to sound like, you know, woe is me and everybody's got a rough start and all that stuff. But I literally was living under the Sunset right at Hollywood Boulevard. And my bathroom was the 76 station on the corner. I think I mentioned that in the book.
Yeah, anyway, you did.
And you learn a lot when you're on the road, and you don't have to be with Jack Kerouac. I knew somehow, Rich, that I was on my way somewhere, but I had to take all these strange paths to get there.
Yeah, and it was preparation, I think, for your character because, you know, your character in the Mod Squad, and I love the show. In fact, my grandmother, who was a close figure to me growing up, and I had decided in the 60s that the two coolest guys we loved on TV were you and Steve McQueen. We watched the Steve McQueen movie.
Oh,
the Mod
man,
Squad.
Am I glad and, you said that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and we just loved Pete Cochran. But I think all that you went through, you know, endowed Pete with, you know, that believability that he cares about the kids that are on the street and he cares about the kids in trouble that are under the bridge. And it seems
absolutely.
Like it was great preparation for your part in a way that you knew that world.
Boy, did you nail that. I grew up rather tough, getting in a lot of trouble and drinking young and fighting and all that stuff. But there was a soft, very soft side. I loved animals and babies at the same time. And I think that's what Aaron Spelling saw when I finally got over to him. Was the show after, well, there's this whole kind of story here about, remember when I went in to meet Aaron?
Oh, yeah, I do. I remember that at first
him.
You were like, no way do I want this.
Yeah, right. I was expecting to get thrown out of those famous gates at Paramount there. And after a couple of minutes, I said, no, I'm out of here. I'm not going to rat on kids. And if you want to give me a motorcycle, I'll be a bad guy. But no way am I going to rat on a kid and then throw him in jail and be a cop like. And Aaron, I just forget it. And Aaron, bless his heart, jumped up on the desk. Literally, you know, Aaron was only about 3.5 feet high and weighed about 7 pounds. And anyway, he jumped up on his desk and he said, Michael, that's exactly what I want. Where I
wow.
thought he was going to call security.
Have to say, Michael, it took a lot of strength on your part because a lot of young actors are willing to, you know, kiss ass or be whatever the producer wants. But you were true to yourself to say, I don't want to be a narc. I don't want to rat out troubled kids. And the fact you were authentic, you know, I mean, and I remember pilot episode, there was a blonde girl that was a friend of your character, and he didn't give information initially because he didn't want to get her in trouble. So
exactly.
That quality you showed to Aaron, you know, helped seal the deal.
It sure did. It, thank you, Richard. Then I started to walk out in there and was saying, don't go, don't go. That's exactly what I want. And I remember this was like the second time I'd been in a studio.
Wow.
And
all the actors listening are so jealous because they're thinking, oh, my God, the second time he became on one of the number one shows.
if I had responded by saying, oh, people are going to love this. The young kids are going to, you know, man, we're this and that, and oh, this is so beautiful, and whatever have you. Aaron would have said, next.
Yeah,
But
well, it seems like
he
the great actors like you have a very strong intelligence and sense of self and tell, you know, the director, you know, their thoughts, and, you know, they're not just a pretty face. There's a lot of strength in what you did with him on that initial meeting.
Precisely, and thank you. You really understand this stuff. There was a thing called emotional recall. It's what Estelle did with me was she never tried, because I quit school like in ninth grade, and I don't suggest that at all. I quit school, but I love education.
Yeah, and you were very literate. I read in your book about the different great works of literature that you were reading as a young man.
Oh, come on. I started to get really into philosophy and stuff like that. Especially the Camus and a little bit of Sartre, but Sartre was kind of over my head anyway. I forgot where the hell I was. What I was just going to say.
Where were we? You know, I hit my head about a week ago, so I'm not as good a help as I normally am. I fell in the tub, but my wife said, you have to warn Michael that you just fell in the tub and hurt about 70%, not 100%. But, let's see, you got the part on Mod Squad, and, oh, I do have to say, I know you've heard this 1,000 times, but the bond and friendship with you and Clarence and Peggy was so great because I grew up in an area that was very racist and segregated, and the blacks were all in one area. My dad and I played jazz guitar in the black club, so we were a couple of the only white guys that went down the black neighborhood. But seeing you loving Clarence and Clarence loving you and Peggy and that kind of friendship at the time of, it came out
true,
here. Yeah.
And it still is, Rich. Still, mind if I say Rich instead of Richard?
Oh, that's fine. A lot of friends call me Rich, yeah.
Okay. There's a story about that. We got hate mail.
Mm.
Can you believe that? Hate mail.
Terrible.
And there's a lot of things going on right now that are very similar, which is kind of depressing. There was a scene, think this, Rich. There was a scene, and we're out in the desert, and the captain got shot. And Clarence got out his knife, and he was trying to dig the bullet out.
Mm.
And it was hot as hell. And Clarence was perspiring. And you know, put your hands alongside your face, and you'll get the idea of how close a shot close-up it was. And he turned his head a little bit to the left, which I was sitting right. I was right next to him, next to the camera, and perspiration was running into his eyes. Now he's trying to save the captain's life, and so I reached in, I tore my shirt, where I got a rag, and I put my white hand in this big frame of a black man's face and mopped his brow to wipe the perspiration out of his, you know, out of his eyes and off his face and that. Whoa! When that's the next day, we started to get hate mail. And I mean wicked hate mail. How could a white man mop a black, or well, not black, but the other word, a black man's brow? And
wow.
I really didn't get that. I mean, I understood it, of course, but I had a hard time getting it in my head and my heart that, geez, because I was helping my friend, it caused such anger.
Yes, yeah.
And that's what was going on
then. There's still
such
hatred and racism.
And I think it is now.
And this is the year that Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. All this is going on, and you guys...
That was right after Bobby.
Yeah.
Whoa, I know. And Dr. King and Jack, his brother, the president. Funny, I still call him the president. And Medgar Evers and Dr. King. And anyway, I grabbed that letter, and I ran down to Aaron's office. Aaron Spelling's office, and I said, Aaron, read this. He read it, and I said, now I know we're on the right track.
Yes. Yeah, when those kind of folks hate you, you know
crap.
You're doing right.
Yes, exactly. I was always very proud, but I didn't quite get it. See, Clarence was a Broadway actor, and he'd been around for a long time. He was even nominated for a Tony.
Mm.
Peg was around. She was under contract to Paramount, and she knew everybody from Elvis to Frank Sinatra and she finally wound up marrying Quincy Jones. So they were all a little bit used. They had their toe in the water long before I did. Maybe that was good for me, because I mentioned a thing I think I did a little while ago called emotional recall.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that happened to me or that I did, I'll always own it. If I really screw up, I will own it. And my buddy Jesus kind of helped me out every once in a while. But having those problems with the emotional recall, Estelle taught me this. If a line in a script is fairly close to what experience you have had, just flip it kind of and put your experience behind that line.
Mm.
And it comes out real. And that's what I always tried for. I thought basically this is a lot of stuff to learn. in monologue. In fact, I didn't get along with a lot of the actors at Estelle's, just because I had the feeling they were more interested, and I shouldn't say this because I liked them all, but I didn't want to work with them so much because I had the feeling that a lot of them were just looking for stardom and such and such. But I wanted to dig deep. I wanted to dig deep and find out what acting was all about. And that's why Estelle was so important to me. I remember a couple of times saying, this is an extreme, of course, if you're playing with matches and you burn yourself, remember what that feels like. Because somewhere along the line, you might be in a fire scene and emotionally recall how much that hurt and burned and such and such. And that's emotional recall. I never had a father, well, for a little while, but if you're lonely, like James Dean in East of Eden, how you didn't get along with his dad. Oh, and I had to happen to work with the lady that played his mother, Jo Van Fleet. Man, that was exciting. And anyway, remember what that burn feel like. Of course, get it taken care of, etc. But plant that seed. Every life experience will probably come back in some form that you can use in a script.
Mm.
And that was very wise of her.
And you did that. I can see the connection in your biography to what you went through, and being, your father taking off and then having the captain being kind of a surrogate father, and just the different things in your own life, your closeness, your mother being the strong person growing up, and then, you know, there's episodes. There was one episode, I think, where you, you know, showed your love to your mother, and I think it was Anita, somebody played
your
mother.
Yeah, we made a show about that.
That was, yeah, so Anita, I can, you did the emotional recall a lot in the show. I can see that.
I thank you. That's the only way I had to go, because I could not, and I'm not blowing smoke up my, but that's the only way I could do a scene, is to do it as real as possible. And that was the way to do it.
I wonder if that's more tiring or draining than actors phoning it in. I'd read a interview with Brando where in Last Tango in Paris, he did a lot of emotional recall speaking over his dead wife's casket, and he said it was like a snail going over a razor, and he was running to his psychiatrist, and then he admitted
some of his
last parts. He goes, I'm just going to phone it in. I don't want to go through the intense emotion of all that, and you know, I can collect a big paycheck. And so he was honest. He said, I'm just going to phone it in. I don't want to put myself through the emotional recall.
That's exactly what he was talking about. Everybody was just really trying to, at the time I was starting out, people were just kind of learning the lines and whatever. But I wanted to know. Yeah, then Brando came along and changed everything.
Mm.
And now we have our great Al Pacino, as, et cetera, et cetera. But Mr. Brando in his earlier works was really onto something. And I'm not blowing smoke again. But Estelle saw some of that in me, not to be like Brando or anything, but saw the depth of the emotion. I mean, I if you swatted a butterfly, I would cry.
Very sensitive, and a very sensitive man, and that's a good quality, a very good quality, because as men we've been taught we shouldn't be like that.
Exactly.
That's weak, but I think it's actually a strength.
Richard, thank you, man. That's who, my life has been like that, and it still is. It still is. I with children also. I went to wherever town I was in. I went to a children's hospital, like St. Jude's, say, and it never ceased to amaze me. Oh, there was one in Madison, Wisconsin, where I was born and raised. Do you remember in the book there where it was Christmas Eve? This is kind of choking me up right now a little bit. There was a big research hospital at the University of Wisconsin. And there was a little girl there, maybe 10, 11, 12 years old. And she was asking for me. And I got to answer this. Now I'm just thinking of all these kids from, you know, that the border thing. And, God.
I've been just praying that'll stop.
I see that little
so
one in the red coat. And instantly well up. I went to the hospital.
When you walked in and she had the pictures of you in the hospital room?
Yeah. Right. God. And it's never ceased to amaze me, Richard, that their attitude and strength of their predicament bails me out. Because I got to stop a minute and maybe take a drink of whiskey or something to calm me down, because I can't face this child just like this. I'm going to start crying. I know it. And anyway, I was like doing a play. I would walk up and down and then say, okay, action. And I'd walk into her room, and there she was laying in the bed. And she just put her arms up, man, and we hugged. And she was very ill. And we hugged, and I pulled up a chair, and I spun some stories about Mod Squad, and she really knew. And then she told me about her hopes and dreams, etc. And then I could see she was tiring. And this is all in the book, I'm sure. But I could see she was tiring. And so it was time to go. And as I stood up to leave, I kissed her goodbye. And her lips were already turning a little blue, which is not a good sign. And anyway, I hugged her. I'm sorry, Richard, but I'm getting a little choked up.
Oh, well, that's a beautiful, and I have no apology needed. I was choked up reading the book. I was actually sitting on the beach down at...
Oh, wow.
With my daughter and wife and sister and son reading that story in your book, and I got choked up on the beach down by my sisters down in Venice, and I read this story, Michael, and I got choked up.
I think we've become kind of instant friends.
I think so.
Man. And anyway, I stood up to leave, and she was kind of fading, you know, going to sleep. And there were two old people in the corner that I didn't even know were there. And I saw the Christmas tree lights from the outside of the hospital and noticed them kind of twinkling on them. And so I walked over and said hello to them, and turned out they were her grandparents and didn't know anything about Mod Squad. And or who I was or anything like that, but they were so moved that I was there and with their granddaughter, etc., etc. And so we just held each other on that Christmas Eve. It was beautiful but very powerful. And I left. By the time I got back to the hospital, by the time I got back to the hotel, she had, I think I said something about there was a fresh snowfall that night, and the snow had melted, and like her, she had melted and joined her buddies in heaven. She
you got
died.
There,
like
you got
about,
there just in time to see her on this side of eternity.
Yeah, isn't that something, man?
And what a great use of the fame. You know, I think that shows that fame can be a wonderful thing. You know, the fact she loved you, had
used that
picture,
so many
pictures
times
from the magazines of you on the wall, and then you were able to be that blessing to her and her family like that.
Yeah, and I take it another way also. She was the blessing to me.
Yes.
I know you understand that.
Yes, it does lift you up. A couple weeks ago, someone asked me to come and speak and play music. I'm a guitarist for this nursing home in Glendale. And I wasn't feeling that great, but we went there and did that. And I'm thinking, you know, this might be a tough crowd here, you know. But I tell you, when you leave doing something like that, you get lifted up as much as you lifted them up. You really
absolutely
do.
Absolutely. Man, you know, where do you live?
I live in Valley.
Sorry,
I live in Valley Village, which is Valley Village, a section of North Hollywood here.
Well, most of the time we're in Sherman Oaks. Let's keep each other's phone number and stuff and meet. I'd love to meet and chat with you.
I would love
okay?
that, Michael. Yeah, I can maybe give it to you through Diane.
Go ahead.
I could give my information to Diane to give you.
Ah, there you go.
And we can connect here. Yeah, I'm in the Valley here, Valley Village, North Hollywood. Our kids graduated from North Hollywood High School. And
I know exactly where all that is.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the Valley. Yeah, my wife works at a elementary school near Laurel Canyon, and I'm here in the Valley. Yeah,
isn't that far out?
Yeah.
I love it. This is
so. You're a Valley guy too, huh?
Most of the time, yes. And God, can you believe, Richard, that show, I just saw a note that I have out in front of me, that show was 50 years ago.
I know, it's amazing to me, and it just stayed in my consciousness so strong until recently we started seeing the reruns on MeTV and some of these stations.
Right.
But there was a long time there where I was like, man, I want to see some Mod Squad reruns, and then when it came back, and it's held up so great.
Hasn't
you know, I made some films myself, directed a few films, and there's a cinematic quality to it. You know, I always loved as a kid, it would make me choke up when they would do that kind of aerial shot. It looks like a modern-day drone shot where the three of you would be, you know, the bond and the friendship, you would feel it, and you'd be walking
and
off,
that was
and then
real.
They would kind of just slowly, you know, pan away higher and higher, and then that music would swell, and it... I mean, truly,
wow.
It, and I'm not blowing smoke either, but it had a cinematic quality that a lot of the shows today just don't have.
That was one of the best endings and teasers in the beginning on TV.
Yeah.
And that pull away, what we wanted to do was to pull away, and no matter how good we were trying to be, et cetera, we were pulling away, but we were still alone. And that worked so beautifully because it left, it kind of, in some way, that was Aaron Spelling again, it kind of left room for the next episode and for us to help somebody else. You know, you had to... You had to have hope in your life, and there's, ready for this, Richard? There's still fan clubs out there.
Oh, yeah.
Thousands of people.
Yeah.
And it just moves me, and so much of the stuff going on today is the stuff we used, where, you know, the Vietnam War, all the wars all over the world, the drugs, the so many things, the guns.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Racism.
Yeah, oh, man, racism and stuff.
Well, we sure need Pete and Link and Julie's spirit today. And by the way, are those of you listening, what a powerful conversation. The book is I Played the White Guy, Michael Cole, star of the Mod Squad. Well, I guess just wrapping up, I want to thank you for also sharing your spiritual journey and the recovery, because I start my morning, Michael. I try to start every day reading some spiritual books, be it recovery literature or the Bible or whatever. And I incorporated reading your book. At first, I was reading it to learn about you to do the show.
Oh, thank you.
But then
that's
as I started
powerful.
Reading it, there's so much recovery and spirituality. Those of you in recovery or of us that consider yourself interested in being more spiritual, this book has a lot of, you know, the spiritual journey of your transformation in it, which I really liked.
Yeah, I love the thank you. I love the way, for some reason, it just started happening, because the Irish Catholic did, you know, must have had something, and my mother was excommunicated.
Oh, that was
so
hurtful. I was so mad about that, because your dad left. It's not her fault. She's this godly, good woman. She, you know, she loves Jesus.
I was
she's a great Christian woman, and they won't let her have communion
because
she's divorced. I mean, that is so... That's so un-Christ-like, you know?
Well put. Well put. I like that.
I hope
yes.
They've changed on that. I don't know if they have, but I sure
I
hope.
I think
that
to a great degree they have. This Pope that we have now is a beauty. He really, I think he gets it.
Yeah.
At least I hope so. But you can, oh, man. Choking me up again. I lost my brother not too long ago, too.
Oh, wow.
He was a military person.
Is that, and you have some beautiful pictures of you two as kids in the book.
Yeah.
And I think
wasn't
the first page, there's a more recent picture of you.
My wife looks at that picture, and Ted was so handsome, and then she looks at this little guy next to him and starts laughing. Every time. Because I'm busy doing something with my fingers and kind of giggling inside about something. But she starts laughing at me. I think that was about two or three, 4 years old.
Wow.
And the two, well, you know from reading the book, the two of us were very, very close.
Well, my sympathy is on the loss of your brother, and, you know, we have parallel lives on that as well. I just lost my youngest brother to an overdose, and that's why your recovery message, I mean, for many reasons, resonates with me as well. So it's,
thanks,
you know, losing, there's nothing like losing a brother. I think of him every day. I was just thinking about him last night, and I'll have little things remind me of him.
Yeah,
and,
you can't get away. When you grew up together, I assume.
Yes, yeah. I was the oldest and youngest of five.
Every so often I just get blasted.
Yeah.
With his presence.
And it's kind of that emotional recall you were talking about, too. Like, for instance, I was clipping my fingernails the other day. And I was the oldest, and I literally, as a kid, my parents were working at a music studio, and I was taking care of him. I would give him his bottle, and I remember him being playing in the mud and the dirt, and his nails were real long. And I remember, cutting his fingernails. So I was just cutting my fingernails the other day, and it floods back, him as a little boy and me helping him trim his nails. And then the emotional recall came, you know.
I was
come
2-3 years old. And I had a really bad stomach. That's in the book, too, I think. Appendix, ruptured appendix. And we were very poor, but we happened to live next door, just a few doors down. There was a doctor. And he said, get Mickey to the hospital now. And somehow we did. We didn't have a car or anything, but my mom had a friend that had a car. And they started just slice you open. And thank God they stopped, what's that word, peritonitis or something like that. It's poison. And it was starting to run through the body. And then I was starting to feel a little better. But I was still in a lot of pain. They brought my brother up, put a bed crossways at the end of mine, and within 2-3 days, we were both fine. He had a sympathetic attack.
Wow.
It's
almost
something?
Like twins, really, that kind of...
that kind of story, right. And so in a few days, we went home together.
Yeah, I read that in the book that he actually, I think, was in the hospital with you.
He was. Because they call it a sympathetic attack.
Isn't that something? Wow, what a closeness.
I love it. And and personality-wise, way down deep, we were exactly the same. But outside, my life... They took opposites to his life. He went to the University of Wisconsin and became a military. When he left the planet, he was a colonel.
Wow.
And his men loved him. He saw Vietnam twice, and he was there, Richard, when the Berlin Wall went up, and he was there when it came down.
Wow, so you both had very interesting lives.
Yeah, and then me going the other way.
Wow.
You know,
well, you're both in service to our country in different ways at a critical time. And
thank you.
This book,
man,
I played
really...
the white guy. It was I really enjoyed reading this book, Michael. I thank you so much for writing, and we'll have to stay in touch. And I want to wish the most blessings to you and your family also. It was nice to read about your family, your daughter, your wife, and just how...
She's a beauty. She saved my life, I tell you
that. Yeah, what a great, great wife to, you know, just lovingly help get you sober. And,
right.
You know, she was a real godsend.
Well, you know what? When we first met Rich, it was in a restaurant, and the first night we met, I saw a friend that I knew. So I went over to say hi to her, and she was sitting next to Shelley. And, whoa, Shelley's beautiful. And so we started talking, and she was funny. She knew a lot about sports. She was a big wig with newspapers, magazines, like GQ, and she even Rolling Stone. She even was with John Kennedy Jr. for a while when he had George, and we hit it off. And from that night on, this is very truth. From that night on, we've never been apart, and that was 26-27 years ago.
Yeah, it was fun to read, too, some of these spots that are right by us. I live by the Sportsman's Lodge, where you two had
right.
One of your first dates.
That's where we kind of romanced.
Yeah. And that's been a spot where some of my friends and I have, gone to eat and everything. So it was kind of interesting reading your story and knowing a lot of these places.
I bet it was. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. You sound like really a beautiful guy.
We've had very parallel lives. The 12 steps have helped me more than just about anything, too. And we have a lot of parallels, and we'll have to keep in touch. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, Michael. It's just been a powerful interview. I'm going to share the link. The link is good for people to listen to the replay that didn't hear us live. So I'm going to share the link out there quite a bit online for people all over the world that may have not got it live, they can still hear it. So, and
I like that last line, if you could use that. Life has really been good. And
life has really been good.
The last line in the book, I forgot it. From doing what straightened my life is out is Shelley, of course, and sobriety. And doing things God's way.
I love that too. In fact, I underline it. It's funny you would say that. You said doing it according to God's plan, not mine. For the first time, things are truly the way they should be according to God's plan, not mine.
That's
I also like how you say at the end about things have a way of working out the way they do for a reason in God's time. There are no regrets in life, just lessons learned. If there's one thing I've learned from the crazy, tumultuous life with its stratospheric highs and tragic lows, it's to live one day at a time. I've made peace with myself, let go of a lifetime of guilt and anger. I have the love of my wife, my beautiful Jennifer, which is your daughter, for the readers that haven't got the book yet. And by the way, get the book. It's called I Played the White Guy. It's available everywhere, Amazon, et cetera.
I feel
a tremendous sense of gratitude for the many blessings I've been given. I love the ending of this book. I underlined all that. It's funny you pointed that out in my copy.
That's
underlined.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Really beautiful. You know, to start out, I mean, I don't know about your early life, but to start out drinking and fighting and going through all that shit at that time and quitting school and being married when you're 16.
It
just went, but I always had a sense I was following something.
Yeah.
And
well, God has shown
me and my
so much
buddy
grace.
Christ.
Yeah,
God
Christ has shown so much grace to us, and to have those kind of things in the background, and then to go to where you went. You've been so blessed, and you blessed us with your talent, and your time today.
I'm telling you, Richard, you're meaning a lot to me, just as a friend.
It's been a lot to have you on the show. And I have to tell you, my grandmother and I, this was a very close thing for us and a comforting thing for us to watch this show. And she was the first person I lost as a young kid and kind of watched us because my parents were busy. And then we went through a lot in childhood. My dad was bipolar, in and out of mental hospitals. This Tuesday night, I think it was around 7:30, 8:30, with my grandma watching this show,
that's
this meant so
beautiful.
Much to me as a child, to feel that friendship, to feel that show. And when they started playing the reruns recently, we were just so excited. It brings back a whole feeling for those of us who love the show. It's a very warm feeling,
I, for the first time in a few years, watched the pilot. And I got into it. I said, you know what? This thing is really pretty good.
Yeah. And it really takes you back to that time period, to that pilot, you know? It really, the look and the, it's so well shot, too. You know, just as a film person,
really
it's
good
so well shot.
And, yeah, Aaron Spelling knew what he was doing with that. And the friendship, actually I shouldn't say friendship so much as the love between Clarence, myself, and Peggy, and then of course the memory of Tighe Andrews. But the love between the three of us was so real, you know, in film, and that you can fake a lot of things, but you can't fake that.
No, and it comes across
true
very
comparison.
Real. Yeah, I think that's what made it work.
I know it did. I just know it did.
Well, thanks for joining us, and blessings to you and your lovely bride, Shelley, Michael, and you've been such a blessing to our audience today.
Oh, I hope so. That is so powerful for me to hear that. And you say that, and I feel you in my heart and your people, your listeners. And okay, guy.
Okay, well, God bless you, and you have a good rest of your day, Michael.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Wait a minute, Richard. What?
Amazon.com.
Yeah, he already said that. Yeah, about Amazon.com.
Amazon, is that the best place to get it?
Yeah, I think so right now. That's the best place to get it right now, isn't it? Yes.
Okay, so get the book, I Played the White Guy, Mod Squad star Michael Cole sharing his journey, I Played the White Guy. Well, thank you, Michael.
Richard, God bless, and we will talk again. We'll become buddies. We already have, really.
Yeah, we sure have. We'll be in touch. Thank you, Michael,
birds
and thank you, everybody,
of,
for listening.
Birds of a feather.
Yes, yes, and thank you, everyone, for listening today. And I also want to quickly mention in our closing minute some friends of ours have a theater, and Michael is a great actor that we had on today, but some friends of mine have the Glendale Center Theater, and I want to encourage you all to visit GlendaleCenterTheater.com, and I'm not paid to do this. I really want to do it from my heart to help this theater. They're having a special event on this Sunday, June 24th. Their number is 818-244-8481. Featuring the music of the Beatles, one of the great tribute Beatles groups. They're having some auctions. Some of my friends that are Disney animators doing some original Disney works and things you can win and prizes and auctions. And the number to call to get more information on this event, June 24th at 5 p.m., there's unforgettable performances. The reservation number is 818-244-8481, 818-244-8481, GlendaleCenterTheater.com. And the center is C-E-N-T-R-E, GlendaleCenterTheater.com. The theater's a worthy cause, and they're having this special event to help the theater, support the theater, to get things like more handicap bathrooms and things that are needed like that. Also, just real quickly, we have an exciting upcoming show on next Tuesday, June 26th, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Amy Brill, who escaped the Children of God cult, a sexually exploitive cult. She was the child bride to an older leader that was sending women out as heavenly harlots to seduce men into the cult. He was teaching these women that they should prostitute themselves to get converts and all that. She escaped this kind of hippie Children of God cult. It was kind of in the same time as the Mod Squad we were talking about earlier. This cult came about, and just a very toxic religious group, how she got out of it and found more of a spiritual path and a healthy life and escaping with her children. That'll be next Tuesday, Amy Burrow, who survived the Children of God. So thank you for tuning in, and please share this link with fans and friends of the Mod Squad and Michael Cole. It was a powerful, powerful spiritual interview today with Michael. Thanks again for tuning in to Richard Rossi Live. Go with God and be blessed.